Welcome to Have You Heard the AABP Podcast. My name is Dr. Fred Gingrich. I'm the Executive Director of AABP. Today we are joined by a lameness expert, Dr. Gerard Kramer from the University of Minnesota. Dr. Kramer is also the chair of the AABP Lameness Committee. He is going to present some research findings which were funded by the AABP Foundation. Please look at the show notes to review the paper titled An Iterative Approach to the Development of a Sole Ulcer Induction Model in Holstein Cows, published in the Journal of Dairy Science. Also check those show notes for links to donate to the AABP Foundation to support clinical research for practicing veterinarians. This podcast is sponsored by Boehringer Ingelheim. Please stay tuned for a brief message from our sponsor. Calling all udder heroes, every lactation cycle, cows are up against the threat of mastitis, which really means you're up against it too. Thankfully, Boehringer Ingelheim has you covered with 360-degree coverage solutions, from prevention to treatment options designed for judicious antibiotic use. The 360 Coverage Mastitis portfolio has the products you need to defend udders at every angle. What's in your cattle toolkit? Experience the power of complete mastitis care at choose360coverage.com. Thank you, BI, for sponsoring this podcast. Welcome to our show, Gerard. Please introduce yourselves for our listeners.
Yes. Hi. Thanks, Fred. I'm Gerard Kramer. I'm at the University of Minnesota. I'm Associate Professor of Dairy Production Medicine. I'm the current AABP Lameness Chair of the Lameness Committee. And I guess I've been working on feet for probably close to 20 years now. Started out in private practice, owned a dairy farm, became a trimmer for a couple of years, did some graduate work on lameness, and now I'm working on lameness, basically research and teaching type things.
You're one of our go-to people, Gerard, for lameness podcasts. And just to remind everyone, we'll have a link to the paper that Gerard and I are going to walk through today, which was funded by the AABP Foundation. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. But let's just start, Gerard, and level set everyone with a broad overview of lameness in dairy cattle. And specifically, what's the importance of sole ulcers as a cause of lameness in dairy cows?
Yes, so lameness is one of the most pressing issues in the dairy industry. As far as causes of lameness, so lameness is just a sign, right? It's not an actual disease. Basically, the top three causes of lameness would be digital dermatitis, sole ulcers, and white lines. So out of those three, depending on the herds, if you have digital dermatitis under control, depending on how much your cows are walking, it's either sole ulcers or white lines that are like your next biggest lesions.
Let's dig into this paper now, Gerard. And first, you presented this to the AABP Foundation for funding. Let's talk about what were some of the reasons you wanted to do this particular study?
That's a great question. So it started a long time ago. I had funding also from the AABP Foundation to do a study on hoof trimming techniques. And when we did that study, we actually ran into a problem where if we eliminate all the cows with chronic lesions, so chronic sole ulcers or chronic white lines or digital dermatitis, the actual number of lesions that we get to do studies on is relatively low, which is a good story, but it makes researching them harder. So then I thought, okay, what's another way we can study this disease? And then a challenge model came up. And way back, probably about 15 years ago, I had a theory that I could give dry cow sole ulcers by doing a certain number of things. I just needed to convince somebody to give me money to do that. And AABP was one of that organizations that was able to provide some funding for me to try and go with the study. But the main reason was basically if we can study disease in a challenge model, we can get answers, I would argue, better and faster. And with the whole premise being that if we want to study treatment, so whether what's the best treatment for sole ulcers, and specifically, I'm interested in using pain control or NSAIDs for that. I want a challenge model instead of having to look at over probably 2,000-3,000 cows and collect data on all those. I wanted a challenge model because I think we can then do that a lot more efficiently and a lot cheaper than looking at thousands of cows.
And You're talking about doing a challenge model. What's our current understanding of the pathogenesis of soil ulcers?
It varies.
Yeah.
So when I went to school, it was like, oh, if we give a cow rumen acidosis, she's automatically going to get what we call laminitis, which is soil ulcers. The evidence for that is actually very poor. So the current understanding of what happens is basically there's a process around transition. And I said a process because we're unclear about exactly what it is, likely involving inflammation and changing of thickness of the body or the digital cushion, but also of the suspensory apparatus that's causing P3 to sink and putting pressure on the corium. But what exactly causes that change or allows P3 to sink is unclear. But that's basically pressure on the corium around calving seems to be one of the biggest risk factors.
I was taught the same thing in veterinary school about 20 years ago too, Gerard. I'm right there with you. Let's talk about the objectives of this particular soil ulcer induction model study. What were your objectives?
Basically, it was a pretty simple objective. Can we give cows soil ulcers if we challenge them? So basically, can we do certain things to an animal and then does she get a soil ulcer, yes or no? That's basically what we were trying to do because that was going to be the first step because if we can do that, then we can study interventions and say, okay, which one worked better or not type thing. So that the objective is really, can we give a cow a soil ulcer?
That seems simple, but your induction model challenges, you had different ones for the three phases of the study. Can you walk us through the beginning section of that paper where you talk about that?
Yes. So basically we started out with three phases. So I needed... Basically, the way researchers get money, they do a little pilot study. So I had some money on the side that I was able to do on 8 cows where we said, okay, I'm going to have a control group and then basically a treatment group. And what we did is basically we put blocks on cows and made them stand up for an excessive time point around the time of calving. So that was the first phase. We saw some changes, but not enough to give soil ulcers. And then we just increased the challenges depending on what we thought it was. So we said, okay, maybe the next step, the next phase, we increased the standing time. So the first stage, I think we did 4 hours, but cows are amazing animals and they compensate. So if I take 4 hours away from a cow, she's going to compensate and just lay down more when we return her back to her stall. So then we got really severe in the second phase. In that phase, we did up to 18 hours where we forced them to stand. And that is, I would argue, the cruelest thing I've done to a cow because after 2 days of doing that 2 days straight, they'll start laying in the alley and all the other things that you expect. Like when you see a barn that's not 100% and cows laying in the alley, to do that, cows have to be really restricted in lying time. So that was the second phase. And we did that in mid-lactation animals. So we basically used the animals from the first study in the second study, crossed them over. Because in the first study, we only saw hemorrhages, soil hemorrhages, and not a lot of them. So we increased the challenge. Then we saw a bit more hemorrhages in the second study. And then with EABP funding, we were able to do the third phase study.
And you mentioned that was potentially the cruelest thing you've ever done to a cow, Gerard. This was through your research facility, through University of Minnesota.
Yes.
These were IACUC approved studies. How did you manage that when we're purposely causing cows pain?
Yes, that's a great question. Yes, so all these studies were IACUC approved. So what we have to do is basically say, okay, what are we going to do if the animal shows sign of too much pain? So there was one animal, basically, as soon as we locked her up and locked her away from it, she would lay down basically within an hour. So if the cows laid down, the out for the animal was that if she laid down twice during our challenge period, then that was too much. And then we had to remove her from that testing period. So during that study, the cows... One animal basically got removed from the study because as soon as she got locked up in the area where we're doing this, she would lay down and she'd lay down twice and be removed from the study. So yes, we're causing pain to these animals, but there's outs for them. And then the justification we make saying if we do this to these smaller group of animals, we can impact a much larger population of animals.
That makes sense. And I'm glad you cleared that up because that's potentially a question that our listeners were thinking about. So thanks for that, Gerard. So let's talk about the outcomes you measured on the animals.
Yeah. So although like our objective was truly, can we get a soil ulcer, which is a pretty clear like thing we can see. If we trim the cow's foot, we can see a soil ulcer, the corium's protruding. So that's a soil ulcer. Other things we measured was basically, so in the third phase, We measured like the heat or thermography of the cow's foot. We measured weight shifting. So we had a platform that Dr. Wagner's used, a previous lameness chair, in some of her studies where we measure, okay, how much weight is each cow putting on side of the leg, on left leg, on the right hind. So we measured that. We also scored the lesions we saw on the foot. So we took a sliver of horn away. Can we see a hemorrhage? Because that's basically an early indication of a sole ulcer happening. And then we also took some blood measurements, like things like BHB and calcium, trying to see if we could see changes in that. We also measured feed intake and rumination.
All right. Now the meat of the study is always the results. Walk us through what you feel are the most important things you found in your results section of the paper.
So basically, the bottom line is I can't induce sole ulcers yet. So that's the short story. The longer story is that we can induce hemorrhages. We can make these cows walk extremely lame. We can have them shift their weight. So if I put up, we put blocks on these cows' foot. So the challenge was basically we put blocks on them in phase three. We also restricted their feed intake and we gave them LPS challenges in different groups. All those things affect the cow like you expect them to do. So the LPS challenge reduced feed intake, reduced milk production, reduced rumination. But as soon, and those cows also have blocks on, and those cows probably had the most severe hemorrhages or had hemorrhages, but not enough to cause a sole ulcer. And same thing with the cows that just had the block on. As soon as we took the block on, so block off, so we gave them, put a block on them for 42 days, then we removed it. So all the behaviors we saw that indicated the animal was lame, like walking, change in locomotion, weight shifting, all those things came back to normal within our follow-up period. Because sole ulcers, the damage happens, and then we have to wait a time period. There's a lag of about 60 days. So we waited at least 60 days to look at the feet again, and we checked them in between. But we saw hemorrhages, but we never saw a complete perforation of the horn to be classified as a sole ulcer. So the meat of the paper is we didn't find sole ulcers. We saw sole hemorrhages. I think we learned a little bit more about what needs to happen for the next challenge model. But I don't have a model at this stage to say this is how we create sole ulcers. I think we contribute a little bit to the knowledge of what could potentially happen. It's probably more than standing time or more than just inflammation. There's a combination of things happening that's probably needs more exploration or further study to figure out.
So does that mean, Gerard, that we still haven't nailed down the exact pathogenesis of sole ulcers?
Unfortunately, yes, that's what that means. I have ideas of what we can do. At this stage, yes. There's still many unanswered questions. I have ideas about what we can do next based on some other research that's been happening. But at this stage, I still can't tell you exactly how a cow ends up with sole ulcer. We think standing time has a role to play. But the question always is, like, how much is too much, right? Is it hours extra? Is it 6 hours extra? I'm pretty confident. Like, we saw some increase in temperature in the cow's feet. So I'm pretty confident the excess of standing time and putting a block on it causes inflammation on it, but it's not enough to damage the corium to stop producing horn, which I think is ultimately what needs to happen. And that's part of the reason we had an LPS challenge, because there's some data to suggest there's a huge glucose drain. So if you deprive the corium of glucose, the thinking was then it would stop producing horn. So that's the reason we included an LPS challenge. And that either wasn't enough or not at the right timing with the standing time, or there wasn't enough. Another theory is there wasn't enough shearing forces happening. So these cows were in a tie stall, but we removed them from the tie stall so they can walk a little bit. But one of the theories could be if we do it in a more typical scenario where the cows are walking more, maybe there's more shearing to cause more damage to the corium or to the freshly growing keratin to create the sole ulcer.
So let's talk about the importance, as a researcher, the importance of proof of concept studies and how that might benefit future research, especially when we're talking about lameness and sole ulcer inductions.
Yeah, that's, I would argue, without ABP's funding, I would not have been able to do this third phase of the study, because I have one more shot. So I'm going to try this ABP Foundation grant. And because of that funding, I was able to do it. And because even though it didn't work, I was dejected. But then we went through the review process for the paper, and the reviewer's like, this is great. You got to continue. You got to try keep go to the next funding agency. So I actually now have a plan because of the review process and because of the AVP funding to put another proposal into the USDA funding. And now we have a published paper. We have preliminary data. We don't have the ultimate result, but we have progress showing, okay, we can do things. There's progress happening. This is the next step or next step in that evolution. So without, I would argue, without AVP funding for both this project and soul ulcers and some of the other work I've done, especially for lameness, where there's, I would argue, not a lot of things to sell, funding from organizations like AVP is critical.
I appreciate that, Gerard, very much. Let's talk a little bit about some of the limitations in this study that you identified.
Yeah, so a limitation, of course, is sample size. We can only do this to a small number of animals, A, because of funding, and B, because we want to minimize the harm we do to the animals. Like I said, some of the things we do are pretty cruel, so I don't want to do that to a larger number than I need to. And then we also had to purchase the animals, so there's a cost associated with it. So sample size isn't, but if you look at other challenge models, so there's challenge models for something like digital dermatitis, they use a very similar sample size. So we feel comfortable if we're going to find something, if this works, then it should work. If it doesn't work, we still have questions. So that's a limitation. So another limitation would be that we use the Ticel facility. Phase two was actually done in a compost facility, but the second or the first phase and the third phase were done with animals that were after the restricted timing, they went back to a Ticel scenario. And in a Ticel scenario, what's different from a feed-stall scenario is that these cows can eat and lay down at the same time, which is not possible in a freestall scenario. So I think in the next iteration, we want to do this in a freestall scenario because I think that taking away that compensation mechanism for the animal increases the standing time. So if I, in a Ticel scenario, I need to restrict them for a longer time period to get the same value of that standing time, I think. So that's another limitation. So to me, the two biggest limitations are sample size and then the housing we were using in this study.
And let's talk about some future research opportunities. I don't want to give away your particular ideas, Gerard, but lameness is such a huge issue in the dairy industry. It has health impacts, welfare impacts, performance impacts. What do you feel we need to do as an industry to improve lameness in the research space?
Great question. And people can have my ideas. We need more work on lameness. I'm freely willing to share. So if anybody's got ideas, let's hear them. From my perspective, probably the biggest thing we need as an industry to focus on is early detection. The earlier we find these lame cows, the better off we're going to be. There's a lot of data showing that if we remove the chronic cows from the population, we don't create a lot of new lame cows. We still create some of the data I have, like we're talking levels like 1-2% in second lactation animals, but that's new cases. The chronic cases sometimes is up to 20-30% of specific lesions. So we need to get these cows detected earlier and treated appropriately because that removes the that reduces the number of chronics, and that in turn lowers the lameness prevalence in our industry. So currently most of my work is focusing on early detection. I'm working with some camera technology and some AI to try and see, can we use that to replace people looking at animals or looking for lameness? Because typically that means somebody has to stand somewhere and look for cows. So if we can replace that with some technology, that's the current focus of my research. And still, I think that I have a dream that in my mind, there's enough data to support this from the UK, that if you have a cow with an ulcer or a white line, if we give her, for the first time, if we give her a dose of NSAIDs, that's going to reduce her risk of lameness going forward. That's all not licensed in the US at this point in time, but that's part of the driving force for creating this challenge model. Because if we have that, then we can go to the regulatory agency saying, we have this model. Now we can evaluate these things for pain, for inflammation, and we can get this onto the market. So that's my dream. That's like my moonshot. Because I think if we were able to give our cows for the first time, they have lameness for the first time, a dose of NSAIDs, we would see a huge impact on both performance, culling, but also on future risk of lameness.
I really appreciate it, Gerard. I also want to just thank you for submitting your project to the AABP Foundation. Appreciate your support of the AABP Foundation. And I just want to remind our members that these research projects that the AABP Foundation funds, they are entirely supported by member donations, 100%. The foundation does about $50,000 a year in supporting funding for research projects, two $25,000 projects. Those are pretty small projects. And so a lot of times, as Gerard mentioned, they can serve as proof of concept studies that can also be utilized as seed money, seed project money. I want to encourage our members, read the paper that we're going to link in our show notes that was a result of this project. But also, if you like this type of research and the foundation only funds research that is applicable to a practicing veterinarian, number one, and number two, it cannot have eligibility for funding through industry or other means, then I would encourage you to donate to the foundation. We get 1,000 listeners of our episode every year, and if everybody gave $25, we could fund another project. So, Gerard, I want to thank you for this podcast episode and your research on lameness and your commitment to the Lameness Committee as our chair. And I want to thank our listeners for donating to the foundation. Thanks, Gerard.
You're welcome. Appreciate the support.